Hello and welcome to the Green Front. Hope you're having a great day. We've got some spring-like weather here on the West Coast, and I understand on the East Coast as well. Went from, I guess, in the 50s to the mid to high 70s in New York, if that's correct. I heard that, and that's, I guess, probably a sign of global weirding. Meantime, we're getting some beautiful weather in the 80s here in the Bay Area, and while that's a little bit warm for this time of year, no one is complaining because spring has sprung. And going to be talking about what's going on with the weather and what's likely to happen if we don't stop fueling Mother Nature, talking about the Keystone Pipeline effort to block that and some new developments this week. Specifically, there's a new campaign just launched against the extension of the Keystone XL pipeline. It's called All Risk, No Reward, and we'll find out more about who's behind it. One of the groups backing this latest opposition offensive is the Nebraska's Farmers Union. We'll talk to the head of that group in just a moment. Well, the world has just lost two very different kinds of advocates for climate change action. As you know, this week, Margaret Thatcher, the former prime minister, died at age 87, but few recall that she was an early proponent for action on global warming. Yes, that's what we used to call it. And last week, film critic and political pundit Roger Ebert died. I didn't know until I found out from Brian Merchant, a journalist on climate science and other environmental issues, told us that Ebert had a little-known but deep concern for the future of our planet. I want to welcome John Hansen to the Green Front. He is the president of Nebraska's Farmers Union and perhaps an unlikely leader in the fight against expansion of Keystone. But I'm going to find out a little bit more about that. And welcome to the program, John.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to be with you today.
We understand the League of Conservation Voters is behind this effort, All Risk, No Reward. That's not surprising. They do these kinds of campaigns. But I was a little pleasantly surprised to hear that farmers in Nebraska are concerned about Keystone. I guess I just thought most of the folks in Nebraska were, you know, either for it because of the jobs, supposedly thousands of jobs that we'll create, but not necessarily the case. Tell us why you and your group are very concerned and, in fact, taking this kind of action and helping to lead this effort, which I think is very aptly called All Risk, No Reward.
Well, first of all, our organization is a general farm organization, which means that we represent all different kinds of agricultural production and producers, all sizes, and all different kinds of approaches. We represent independent family farmer, owner, operator, agriculture, and we are celebrating our 100th birthday in the state of Nebraska this year. Nationally, our national organization is the second largest farm organization in the country. And we're the second largest general farm organization in the state. We represent our members' interests through the policy which they develop. And we did not have a policy on oil pipelines. We have a policy that goes on for great depth on lots of other things, but not that. And as our landowners were being dealing with TransCanada representatives and all of the eminent domain and all of the liability and all of the siting and routing issues, our members came together with county resolutions, district resolutions, came to state convention, and the policy that we have in our organization was developed by our members, and it represents a very comprehensive policy based on a landowner's perspective. And there simply is no excuse whatsoever for the unprofessional, unethical fashion in which TransCanada has engaged with our landowners. They have misrepresented their legal status during negotiations. They have fudged on the facts. They have misrepresented who's signed easements, who has not. And so that is the process by which we got drug into this issue. And we are proud to partner with all of these other organizations who are in this struggle for a variety of reasons.
Yeah, and I was somewhat facetious when I said, why would locals be concerned? Because, of course, this pipeline would be running right across your critical water aquifer, and so you would think that you would have a lot of concerns. But, again, if you believe TransCanada's publicity, you know, the locals are in favor of it.
Well, I mean, the old axiom about the buck stops here. Well, in the case of oil pipelines, the oil leak starts and ends on our landowner's land. And they know what kind of land they have, what kind of soils they have, and they have a pretty good idea of whether or not their ground is sandy and prone to leaching or whether it's not. And so the alternative route that TransCanada has said takes care of the environmental issues simply is not the case. We've got, by our estimation, about 109 miles of very sandy soil that oil and water and tar sands could move through very quickly and easily. All of the pipeline in Nebraska, proposed pipeline, would be going through the Ogallala Aquifer, and in large portions of this new proposed alternative route, it's not very many feet to water. So if there's a leak, we have an immediate contamination issue. Our landowners are very concerned about the liability to their growing crops, their liability for the spill. Obviously, it's not their pipeline. It's not their product. But they're the folks who are going to bear the brunt of the spill and the leak when it comes. And it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when, where, and how bad.
As we've just seen in Mayflower, Arkansas.
Every pipeline we've ever built leaked. It would be a fool's errand to assume that any pipeline that we're going to build in the future would not also at some point in time leak. We're talking about a product manufactured by man that's going to be in the ground for over 50 years.
In fact, on the website, which just went up for the campaign, All Risk, No Reward, there's a professor of environmental and water resources engineering quoted from the University of Nebraska, Dr. John Stansbury, releasing a report that says if the pipeline is built, it will result likely in some 91 major spills over the 50-year lifespan of the pipeline. And he says, given the unique chemical makeup of tar sand oil that causes it to sink into the water, as you're explaining, and these spills, of course, particularly difficult to clean up because of the, you know, nature of it not being like usual crude, but really, you know, the bitumen, I guess if that's how you pronounce it,
yeah,
being especially tough to clean up. As they're seeing in this neighborhood in Mayflower, Arkansas, many of the residents not even aware that they were sitting on top of a pipeline. So if Mother Nature is weighing in, it seems her timing is good in terms of having this, you know, all over the front pages, and the major news networks are covering it right as TransCanada is trying to have us all believe that what could possibly go wrong.
Right, and why in the world would you build a toxic, hazardous, carrying pipeline right through the middle of one of the primary water supplies in the Midwest? That's the largest underground aquifer in the country. Nebraska has the most of the Ogallala Aquifer in our state. The potential to livestock. If you've ever seen tar, tar doesn't flow. You obviously have to dilute it with a whole bunch of very toxic chemicals in order to get it to the point where it'll flow. You heat it up, you put it under pressure. We don't even know, they won't tell us what's in there. Mixture, because they say it's proprietary. Well, it won't be proprietary when it gets in our water supply. Poisons our families, poisons our livestock. As processes go, the company is now in the courtship of our landowners. And so if during the courtship folks lie, cheat, steal, and use undue pressure and are abusive, how do you think the marriage is going to go?
Mm-hmm. Good point, and I certainly didn't mean to be laughing about the proprietary issue. It's no joke whatsoever. It's serious, and public health concerns are great. People in the Mayflower neighborhood talking about, you know, just being almost overcome with the fumes initially, and even though Exxon is, you know, cleaning it up, of course, where are they putting it, and, you know, what are the long-term impacts of, you know, being exposed to this kind of oil and tar? It's not really known, but based on what some of Dr. Ricky Ott has done in her work looking at the Exxon Valdez people who worked on the spill cleanup, years later, they were having, fishermen were having all kinds of not only problems with their livelihood, but with their lives, with their health.
Oh, there's no question that the track record of the industry is to come in, issue press releases, spread money around, and grease the wheels for these projects. And then when things go bad, it's the big dumb show. And then, you know, there's not the same amount of corresponding enthusiasm to actually follow through and clean things up. In a lot of cases, based on where they put the pipeline, it's next to impossible to clean it up if they wanted to, and unfortunately, in most cases, they don't. Their own track record in these cleanups is a problem. So how much of what gets of the liability gets stuck then with the local community, with the landowners, with the other folks, and of course, you know, we're looking at it over the long term, because these are long-term pipelines. They're not 1 or 2 year deals and then they're gone. You're running these pipelines right through light, sandy, porous soils that are a few feet from water, and they're going to be there for 50 or more years, carrying very corrosive, very toxic, very hazardous materials. And we have no idea whether TransCanada as a company will even be around in 2 years, much less 50.
John, do you know Randy Thompson, the chair
behind
All Risk, No Reward? Do you know what his motivation was in starting this? Because, you know, 350.org, Sierra Club, other environmental groups have been demonstrating outside the White House and holding rallies and trying to activate the citizenry to oppose this. But your voices seem to be coming from, you know, the heart of it and the heartland as we look not only at the risk to the climate but also just to those who are going to be most, you know, closely impacted by this pipeline going right through your state.
This first proposed pipeline would have gone right through his parents' property. His father has passed away, but his mother was still alive at the time. And so he began helping his mother deal with the company. And, you know, folks who are paying attention to business and have business experience and are somewhat familiar with these things, it doesn't take them very long to pick up on the fact that the facts are altogether too fluid coming from the company, and that they are using tactics that are not quite professional or ethical or appropriate. And so Randy started picking up on, you know, if you don't, if you can't just get the quick, easy close for an easement, or then you start using pressure. And when the company started using pressure against his mother, that's when he just, you know, got more actively involved and said, you know, my mom's old, but I'm not. You know, stop picking on her. Mm. And so we represent landowners. And so I can tell you story after story of things that would make any person with any ethical timber at all blush. Over the way the company has treated our landowners. There is simply no excuse for the way that they have treated our landowners. It should not be tolerated, but it tells you a lot about how the company operates. And so we have learned a lot about TransCanada and their willingness to say or do whatever needs to be said or done in order to be able to move their project forward. As you know, from Canada to Texas, you know, they have not encountered the kind of resistance that they have encountered in Nebraska, and a lot of that is due to the fact that our guys are willing to stand up for their own interests and also do their homework. God bless them. You know, when you talk to our landowners and the folks who are out on the front lines, they have done their homework. They understand the technical parts of the chemical mixtures. They understand all the different nuances of easements. We're getting them to work together in order to have their legal interests and liability interests represented by competent legal counsel together in a more organized kind of fashion. And so while the state of Nebraska has been very slow to protect our landowners' interests. Our landowners have come together, worked together, and done a great job, and it's been a great working relationship between all of the different parties. Our organization does a lot of work and has been the pioneer on a lot of renewable energy development in the state of Nebraska. And so when you look at this pipeline, we started looking at the ownership of the tar sands. These tar sands are not going to U.S. markets. They are being moved through the United States at our risk to international ports in Texas with refineries. This product will go to the owners of the tar sands, who are almost all foreign countries or foreign companies. This will not be energy independence. So that, how can it possibly be in the U.S.'s primary economic or strategic interests to help foreign companies and foreign countries get their carbon emitting intensive oil home? That's not in our environmental interests. It's not in our economic interests. We're left holding the bag. We're simply owning the liability for this pipeline. We're not getting any benefit if there is one. And, you know, from a big picture standpoint, this is really a failed and dysfunctional national energy policy gone bad.
And one of the things that's very dysfunctional is the range and numbers of how many jobs it would create, everything from, you know, 35 permanent positions to, you know, some of the proponents saying 250,000 jobs. They don't mention whether that's temporary or permanent, but it's probably fictional anyway. I mean, that's ridiculous. And that just shows you how no one really has a good handle on this.
Well, the company has issued numbers which simply are not consistent with any other pipe construction that is any kind of represents any kind of an industry standard. And the bulk of the jobs are going to be short-term temporary construction jobs. And the one of the economic benefits of a pipeline is that you operate a pipeline with relatively few people. So that means relatively few jobs. If you were to take an investment of this size going through our state, we would get a lot more permanent jobs, for example, with a lot more ongoing tax benefit if we were to build a corresponding amount of wind projects than we do with a pipeline. The pipeline project is a commercial venture. These guys are in it. They're in the business of moving oil, tar sands, for money, and they don't make any money unless they build the project. So their commitment to the long term is really questionable. Their commitment to getting it built is you know, their primary focus. And whether it's good energy policy, whether it's good environmental policy, is not their concern. Their job is the relentless pursuit of getting the project built and doing whatever it takes to do it. And we've found that over and over again based on how the company operates in our state.
What about the argument that this will reduce our dependence on Middle Eastern oil?
Well, it's not going to reduce our dependence on oil if all the oil goes to foreign companies and foreign countries. And that's when you understand the ownership structure of the tar sands, you realize that this is just a myth. This is a public relations derived myth. And so when we have asked the State Department to provide us with information about the ownership or to correct our analysis of the ownership, they've been unwilling to do so. Well, how can Americans make an informed decision about whether this is in their national interest if you don't know who owns the product and where it's going? So it's there is no information right now based on the ownership structure of the tar sands that would indicate that these products are going to U.S. markets.
John, thank you. I've got a couple more questions for you. I really appreciate your being with us. First of all, do you represent the majority of Nebraska farmers, do you think, with this position, or is there division? Is there unanimity? If you could tell us about that. And then I'm also wondering about the polls that show that a majority of Americans still are in favor of building this pipeline, and if you have hope that public opinion can be reversed with enough efforts to get the word out before President Obama, who can of course make the decision on his own, will decide.
Well, the I represent my organization's policy, and I've been involved in public policy either as a state president of my organization or an elected public official for just about 40 years now, and so I'm in the public arena a lot, and we do a lot of engagement, a lot of other issues. We're involved at the state level, and so I was asked before the legislative committee by a senator whether I would be happy if the route got moved, and I said, well, the honest answer is that I will be trading a group of unhappy landowners with the old route in for a set of new unhappy landowners of the new route, and that's exactly what happened. And in fact, there's more opposition with the alternative route than there was even the old route, because they had seen the way that the first route landowners had been treated and were a lot more consumer aware. And there's a difference of opinion. There's some landowners who are clearly for it. Some accept the company driving point, which is, gosh, it doesn't make any difference whether you're for it or against it. It's going to happen. It's inevitable. You just need to get good with it because it's coming. And that's been one of their primary tactics from the beginning. And so it's divided. There's a genuine concern about the use of eminent domain and the abuse of private property rights by landowners, I think, across the state. They know that what goes around comes around. So they've been concerned about that part of it. And in terms of the big picture, anytime you swallow a lie, it comes back to haunt you. And the lie of energy independence, which is the one that is being dispersed by TransCanada and the oil interests, and a lot of Americans have bought, is simply not true. This is not going to reduce our dependence on foreign oil. What will is if our country gets serious about the business of building renewable energy infrastructure with a long-term commitment to take advantage of our world-class wind resources, our solar resources, our bioenergy, all of those things are renewable energy resources. Here's jobs that are made in America, and the economic and environmental benefits accrue directly to us as citizens. And so of all the paths that we could take in order to reduce the impact on climate change and at the rate that we're distorting our environment, opening up the tar sands is the worst possible public decision that we could make at this point in time. And whatever Americans think today, if this project goes through, they're going to have buyer's remorse.
Mm. Boy, you are my new hero, John Hanson. It's so great to hear your strong opinions, and I agree with everything you're saying, and most of our listeners do as well. I couldn't let you go, though, without asking you, how you're doing with the drought. I understand it's continued, even though it's not in the headlines. How bad has it been, and how is that hurting your fellow farmers?
Well, it's been... I've been in the farming business for over 40 years, and... We just suffered the worst drought in my lifetime, and we've had at least three really substantial droughts in my 60 years, and it was the hottest summer, the hottest year on record, and the driest year on record in Nebraska, and so our subsoil moisture is next to nothing, and that's one of the key indicators of our crop, our livestock, our pasture prospects. So the weather has been extremely difficult. We're now getting a pretty decent rain and some snow coming through our state in the last several days, and hopefully the next couple of days. It's the best moisture system that we've had since last June. But even as it goes through our state, it will still leave our subsoil so far from being normal that as we go through this next year, the concern about the drought is on everybody's mind. It's already taken a huge toll on our livestock producers. And of all the things that Congress can't get around to doing, it can't get around to passing a decent permanent farm bill that has funding for livestock disaster assistance, which we so badly need. So we don't have the USDA tools to deal with this drought. Our Congress, instead of helping us, has abandoned us. And so there's a lot of frustration, and you know, people are running out of financial reserves. And so we're seeing a lot of, especially in the, we're the largest red meat producing processing state in the country. And so we're seeing a very heavy negative impact on our cow-calf operators, especially hay is hard to come by, hard to pay for. And, you know, if pastures don't get rejuvenated with these rains, we're in deep trouble heading into the summer months.
John Hanson, thank you so much for your time and for your perspective. We'll check back with you as this goes forward. John Hanson is the president of the Nebraska's Farmers Union. They are one of the groups leading this new campaign against the XL pipeline expansion, and that campaign is aptly called All Risk, No Reward. When we come back, we'll talk about Roger Ebert, some things you may not have known about the beloved film critic and pundit, right after these messages.